Here we go with the John Curley Sherry Ellicker Show. That's right. Combination news entertainment. We like to call what, Andrew?
Newstainment.
Bother you, but it's newstainment. All right. Sherry is not behind her glass door. She just texted me. I am down in the basement practicing getting ready for the show. Okay, go. Sherry.
What?
Come on.
I'm just getting some stuff done. Okay. And I'm practicing a little song, okay?
All right.
Do, 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 do. I'm ready now.
Okay. Andrew? Oh, she's doing the same
stupid song. I gotta get up to open the door.
I can't. Just sing through it.
When you get caught between the moon and New York City.
Really?
I know it's crazy.
No, it's crazy.
Yeah, but it's true.
Oh, God.
If you get caught between the moon and New York City.
Okay. Okay. Gonger, Andrew. Please.
Do.
Sorry, Sherry.
Look, good job, I didn't have time to get a new song together because you interrupted, and I was all ready, and then I had to do that
song.
One.
All right, off to a bit of a clunky start, but that's all right. Hey, listen. Here's some good news. The Bellevue has decided that they will extend the benefits. Remember that police officer that was following Vice President Kamala Harris? And he had a horrible accident that ended up falling over guardrail and down onto the traffic and was injured. I mean, really seriously injured. And then the news broke that, well, we're not going to cover your medical. Now, it looks like, I guess, enough pressure, and they took a good look at this. So they had decided that they will continue to cover his medical expenses because he will continue to need additional help and rehab. So that's some good news. And I would assume that that story, first being broken, I think maybe Brandy Cruz had it at Undivided, and then some other organizations picked up on it. It's probably enough that they're like, geez, we better do something about this. So good news for that police officer.
Yeah, they decided in Bellevue that they would extend benefits where they're needed due to extensive injuries while on duty. So this officer got injured. He was covered for a while. When his benefits ran out, they said, sorry, that's all you got. And that's when they went and they put this new thing in place.
Yeah, I talked to a fireman. He was sitting next to me on the plane. And he's no longer a fireman in Tacoma. And he told me a story where this, I don't go into the detail of it, but it was a problem. It happened. And he then went to his boss, the union boss, and said, hey, listen, what's going to happen with this? He goes, well, listen, if the media doesn't pick up on it, then, you know, just we'll keep going as we're going. But if the media picks up on this and does this story, we're probably going to have to, you know, get rid of you.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, oh my god, really, that's what it's coming down to? That's it? If the media picks up on it, you're not going to cover me? And he goes, yeah, like, no, we're gonna have to just kind of cut you loose. So often it is when the media finds a story and they get on it, then people that are in positions of power and elected officials, leaders, as I think they like to call themselves, you know, have to address these problems. So that's good news. Here's just a little bit from Cuomo, just kind of put a bow on the whole story.
An update now on the Bellevue police officer badly hurt while on duty during Vice President Kamala Harris's visit last year.
Mm-hmm.
Bellevue City Council members now confirm they have found a solution to cover all medical benefits for Officer Kevin Beretta. Back in August, the motorcycle officer was seriously hurt when he fell about 60 feet onto I-5 from an overpass in Seattle. His benefits from the city only lasted 6 months. Beretta's recovery is taking much longer than that. Now, after negotiations between the Bellevue city manager and the police union, the city will cover extended medical benefits for first responders up to 18 months when they're needed due to extensive injuries suffered while on duty.
Okay. There you go. Good news. Mm-hmm. Should we take a little credit for that one, Sherry?
Yeah. Are we the media? Are we considered the media?
Yes, we are.
Well, you never know. Yes, I would
say
so. You
got a hat on that says press. Yes.
I got a badge. Yes, I think that we can put a little feather in our cap for bringing attention to this, which is so important.
Got it. Haven't done much about this one, but now the Strippers' Bill of Rights has been passed, and you're going to be able to have, you don't get charged as much. Well, who did this one? Was this more from Cuomo? Thank God, those could, and more people in the media just sort of piggybacking on these guys. My concern is getting robbed. Carrying cash in Seattle, that'd be a big problem. But here's Cuomo with the Stripper Bill of
Prosecutors
Rights.
Prosecutors in King County, they wanted the ability to regulate the distance between dancers and their customers, saying it could prevent criminal activity. But today, the governor signed this legislation into law as is.
This bill helps ensure adult entertainment establishments are safe for workers.
Flanked by supporters of SB 6105, known as the Stripper's Bill of Rights.
Was he backed by them, or were they sitting on his lap? Did you see the picture, Joe?
I think they were on his lap.
Okay. Governor Jay Inslee gave his approval with a stroke of his pen.
It's pretty simple why we're passing this bill. These are working folks, and working people deserve safety in the environment in which they work.
The legislation requires more protections for dancers and safety training for all staff, including security that works on site, something the bill's sponsor championed.
And that is really critical to make sure that people understand signs of trafficking, of how to do de-escalation, how to make sure that they are creating a safe workplace for everyone.
Clubs that meet these new safety requirements will also be allowed to get liquor licenses, though extensive rulemaking will still need to occur before alcohol can be served.
Without liquor and without these safety protections, all of the burden was on the workforce, on the dancers.
Thank you.
Prosecutors had urged the governor to veto one section of the bill that prevents Seattle and King County from passing their own rules, mandating a specific distance between dancers and their customers, as well as when money could be exchanged, saying it could lead to more crime.
I think one of the most important parts of this legislation is the section that they were trying to veto.
Dancers have been fighting for years for these changes, saying they've been subjected to harassment and lost wages, and now protections are finally in place.
It's still kind of like surreal that this passed. At any moment, I was still thinking that any portion could get vetoed.
The new law takes effect in January, but the Department of Labor and Industry still needs to draw up the parameters around these safety requirements and how they'll be implemented before any liquor licenses will be issued. Reporting live, Joel Marino, Cuomo News.
If a dancer makes like $600 a night, how much do you think she tells the government she's making?
Well, I don't know about the government, but part of this bill says that she can only be charged up to $125 per night goes to the club. So, I mean, look at a waitress or a waiter. How much are they really declaring?
Well, they figured it out. I know they have some sort of calculations to figure out how much money they're supposed to be making per hour or something. But, I mean, it's cash business, right? I had a friend dance for the longest time in New York, and she was bringing some big bucks. $500 a night, $600 a night. Now that they got liquor in there, they're going to make a heck of a lot more money. Some of these women were saying that they'd go in, they'd pay the $130 or whatever to the house, to dance. And then it would be a slow night. They wouldn't make any money. And then the house would say, well, you owe us money. Then they would have this balance that they'd have to, like, pay off on this. I don't know if they've charged interest on it, but I mean, you could get behind on it, and then you only find yourself in there basically working for free for a couple hours or a couple of days. So once you put the alcohol in there, more people will go, the clubs will make more money, and then they should really determine the distance stuff, 2 feet, 3 feet, or whatever. I think they should leave it up to the clubs, let them determine what they want.
Yeah, the fees can go up.
Have you gone to a few of these clubs, Sherry?
I've heard that, yes.
Science.
Research.
Research. Those bouncers are there. I mean, they are on you immediately. I have a couple of joker friends that get kind of drunk and reach and touch the girls, and those bouncers are like, boom, don't touch the ladies. They don't call them folks like the governor does. Don't touch the Washingtonians.
It's kind of a homey way to refer to them. It's 30% is the most they can take, or 150, and they are no longer allowed to charge fees or any kind of charges related to unpaid balances. So if the person owes money after a night, that's it. That's all the money they're going to owe.
They're going to let them have lap dances too? Is that part of the stripper's bill of rights?
I would assume so. It's a big part of stripping.
It's a big part of stripping. You're going to make the money in the other room. That's right. Or you get stripped, take off all your clothes, and hope people throw money at you. Or get yourself a Powerball or a Mega Millions lottery ticket. We used to do this at Cairo. Ursula was always the one that organized this. You know, oh, we're all throwing in. Everybody throws a dollar in. The only reason people threw a dollar in is because it was just the sense of, like, if I don't throw a dollar in and all these other people, they all win and hit. They all quit. And then I'm the only guy there, like, oh, saved a dollar. But then, you know, Ursula's gone. Everybody else is gone. She's like, oh, you're forced into buying in. Did they get one going again at Cairo? Have you known? Have you heard, Joe?
I haven't heard one for either of these two, but it was a billion.
Teeny's doing. Okay, Teeny. All right. Yeah, Teeny's got one going.
She got it?
All right.
Okay.
Good for her.
Yeah.
Potato.
Okay. Oh, good.
Don't know what that means. Did you buy a ticket?
No.
Will you?
No. No. Why? I mean, yes. Is it extraordinary? They say that the Powerball is up to $865 million. If you wanted to take the lump sum, it would be $384.8 million. Mega Millions up to $1.1 billion. If you took the lump sum, it'd be $525.8 million. It'd be the
look
the
at you
payout.
With the math.
I just did it in my head. I hope it's right.
It's just a study that's done that if you buy one ticket, you think, if I buy one ticket, I'll be excited. If I buy two tickets, I'll be twice as excited. Actually, the excitement diminishes after buying the first ticket. You don't get additional sort of excitement because it's not like, oh, 10 tickets or I'll buy 100 tickets because, you know, your odds are really horrible on the thing anyway. But you don't get even more excited, you know, when you get the ticket and you figure out if you're going to win or not. There was the guy, I forget who it was, he happened to be absent that day. Do you remember the story where he was absent? They always did the thing. He didn't throw in that particular day. And I think he sued. He wanted to get like his portion of it. I think the story is like 6 or 7 years old. And he ended up going after the other employees that he was normally in the pool with. He said, you know, they didn't get my dollar that day, but I was always in there. Like, shouldn't I get a piece of it? And I think they did. The court might have stepped in and given him something, but he didn't get what everybody else got. But, you know, the suckers that pour their money into that thing. It's a tax on foolish people.
Yeah, I've never been interested in the lottery. It just seems so far-fetched. And I know people that have gotten, during these really big mega jackpots, you know, they get 30, 40 tickets. Like, that's really going to make their odds so much better. They've just lost $40. They could have, you know, gone out and have a drink somewhere. But I don't know. I don't. It's not my cup of tea.
So he was out sick. This is a Canadian guy. It was a Canadian lottery.
Okay.
$50 million they won. He was out sick. He sued them because he alleged they cut him out, and they settled. It doesn't say how much he got, but apparently they just gave him some, you know, shut up money.
That's right, Canada. Suck on that.
Yeah. Thank you, Danny. That doesn't quite seem fair. So he was out. They didn't cut him out. He wasn't there at work that day. Would you? I mean, I got on as the judge or whoever they settled on the thing. But it's like, what standing do you have? You weren't there. You didn't pay. Why should they give you a piece of it? But
he was on vacation.
Always giving you the money.
I wasn't even sick.
Oh, all right. Judge and jury on this one. Let's be the three judges. Would you give him the money? Yes or no, Sherry?
No.
Wow. Joe?
No, I don't think so. Maybe if he asked nicely, but if he sued me, absolutely not.
Okay. Oh, please, please, can I have some of that $50 million, please?
I like your shoes. Please.
They call it the magic word for a reason.
That's true. I did a story on a guy in Lancaster, outside of Lancaster, Pennsylvania. He had won the big Pennsylvania lottery, and we went to interview him in his gigantic house that he had purchased. And we were unable to interview him in the house because they had shut off his electricity because he didn't have any money to pay the electric bill. So we walked in there. He's like, yeah, it's going to be kind of dark. And it was this giant house that had like very little furniture in it. He had blown through all the money. His family and friends had taken big, big chunks from him. And then he had this house that he couldn't afford. Most of the people end up not being, you know, overly happy after they win it. You get an initial bump and then your happiness level goes back down again. Crazy study that they say even people that suffer like serious physical harm, being paralyzed or losing an arm or a leg or something, they said, you know, as much as you're sort of, it depresses you for a while, you do kind of naturally just float back up to that middle level of where you were before. And the same thing with lottery. You go up, way up, and then all of a sudden you come back down again. You just have more problems. And people that weren't very good with money to begin with now are just making worse decisions with even more money. And the I know other people have sued not wanting their names made public. You know, the giant check, you have to stand there and show your name, and they want to be anonymous. States have said, nope, you can't be anonymous on this sort of stuff. They try to protect their identity as much as they possibly can because they know everybody's going to be coming after them. If you won, Sherry, I would ask you for a little something-something.
Would you? Okay, yeah, let's say I won. Let's say I won $2 million. Would you feel the right to ask it?
Please?
You'd only want half? Wow, that's generous.
Well, you start high, you work your way down. If I didn't, you know, you'd be like, a million? Really? I'm like, I don't know. And then you'd make me an offer, which would be probably a little less, but a little bit more than I would have asked for. You always start high. All right?
Okay, good strategy.
Thank you. Thank you for that. Oh, no. Now science is going after those people who do polar plunges. By the way, I no longer admit to doing polar plunges because it's one of these things. Everyone talks about that. Like, how do you know somebody does CrossFit? Just wait, they'll tell you. How do you know somebody's running Ironman? Don't worry, they'll tell you in the first 2 minutes of conversation. Now the same thing with polar plunges. It's become this thing that people always try to work the conversation around to it. Like, oof, wow, it's cold out. I hope I'm able to polar plunge today.
Never been one of those people, even though you used to do it.
Oh, I know. No. I'm not anymore. I'm reformed.
Okay.
But now there's science saying it doesn't do much for you. We'll hear about that one, plus a whole bunch of other news to get to. Let's see. Another one's in here as well. Why Jack plans on naming his child John Kirk? What the hell?
Oh, that's the tease.
Breaking.
Jack Stein's gonna have a kid?
He's gonna have multiple, and they're all gonna be named John Curley, apparently.
Oh, this is weird. All right, let's. Writing to us, good for you. You can write to us at mynorthwest.com. Although Andrew says nobody does. Coming through the Muckleshoot Casino Resort text line, Teeny's in charge of that. Teeny, yes.
Yes.
She's going around the office trying to get dollars from everybody, Sherry. That's right. Okay. 1-888-973-5476. There's always somebody coming along and, you know, just pooping on ideas that people have and trends. It's always not healthy for you. It's reading what the National Heart Association said. You're not a polar bear, so don't go in the water. Now a new study comes out. It's questioning whether or not these polar plunges are any good for you. Wim Hof, the guy that started it all, who is a genetic freak, I think he climbed up to, I don't know, 18,000 feet or something up to Everest in a pair of shorts and sneakers or something without a shirt on. I mean, he does all sorts of wild stuff. And I don't know how he's able to do all this. He says it's all about the mind and the power of the mind. So he's kind of the guru of all of this. I was going to go to Poland and study with him, and it was for like 4 days or something. I thought, well, this would be kind of interesting with Wim Hof, go do that sort of thing. So
the
Wim says,
thing that helped me for real was going into the cold. Because then, at that moment, you are surviving. You learn to survive instead of being taken on by your emotional agony. Suddenly, you open up to peace inside. And that inaugurated the healing. The cold is a in the prehistorics was our enemy. And that brought people together. You better work together to face the enemy, the cold. It creates a natural camaraderie because the opposing force is out there. And you and once you begin to act like a community, you become stronger. That is it.
Okay. His wife committed suicide. I think she jumped out a window, leaving him with kids. I think two kids, if memory serves me correctly. So this is a long time ago. He didn't have a lot of money. He was really sort of just kind of a hippy-dippy guy. And then it was the polar plunge that sort of, I guess, helped him with the depression. And there's all sorts of science as well showing that if you do this, it can help reduce anxiety and depression. They're doing people that are on the serotonin reuptake inhibitors compared to those that aren't. Those are doing polar plunges. They see whether it's better. They don't quite know why it works, but it does work. So what are the people coming out saying it's not good for you or you shouldn't do it, Sherry?
What they're saying is there aren't enough studies that are complete enough to really make the determination. About the only thing that they've discovered is that, yes, it does reduce inflammation. Inflammation is the cause of many diseases and illnesses, so that alone makes its proponents say it works. If it reduces inflammation, that alone is enough to say that it works, and that they can pretty much prove. But the other things, they really don't have enough information yet. Everything was done in very small sample sizes. There's no real study to show long-term effects mentally if this really worked. Mm-hmm. And they say the quality of the studies is also pretty low.
You know, you should jump in the cold water. I think every single day was Katharine Hepburn. When she lived up in Maine, I think she was in Maine, and she would go and get in the Atlantic every day, or mostly every day. And she swore by it. She'd walk down there in her bathrobe and, you know, kind of marching down, get into the water and sit in there and get back out again. You know?
Well, she lived a
Norman.
Pretty good...
What is it, Sherry? What? Go ahead.
You old poop.
Norman. Norman. Norman, how's the angina? How's the angina, Norman? Norman?
I'm the feeling what? My inflammation go.
The pain, Norman, the pain.
She lived a long time, I think.
She did.
Well into her 80s or 90s.
Yes. Katharine Hepburn. Big fan of crazy Katharine Hepburn. Did you know, as a fun little sort of side note, that when Anthony Hopkins was asked about the voice that he did for that Silence of the Lambs, it was a combination of Katharine Hepburn and Mr. Rogers. He combined those two voices together for that whole, hello, Clarice. Yeah, he was doing a Katharine Hepburn imitation.
I'm sure she was so proud. She also never went out to dinner because she said it was a complete waste of money. She said, why would I go spend, I think back then it was, you know, $30 on a steak when I can make one perfectly well at home.
That's right, Norman. How's the steak, Norman?
Cheap.
Well, we're off the cold plunge for a topic. One more Katharine Hepburn story. You ready?
Yeah.
She said that she was doing a show on Broadway, and she said, every day I'd go there, and I would have horrible diarrhea. At the same time, every day, the butterflies in my stomach. And she said that she talked herself out of the butterflies and said that the show didn't matter. She wasn't going to get nervous. She wasn't going to let it bother her. She just talked herself down and got rid of the butterflies and didn't have to void her bowels violently before going on stage. And she said, it was the worst show I had ever done. Horrible. That was terrible. So she said that the butterflies are a natural part of the performing, and you just sort of take that along with the fact that, you know, you have to go to the bathroom beforehand. A lot of runners do that before races because they get all nervous and stuff. That's kind of a thing that, and so I remember reading that about her, that she said, you know, make friends with the butterflies. Don't try to get rid of them. Keep the excitement and the energy always there with you. I know that I do that every day before I come on to this show, Sherry, just trying to make friends with the butterflies.
Oh, I was going to say... Are you talking about the diarrhea or the butterflies?
You know, I knew you'd go there.
Yeah. So what happened?
That doesn't happen. I don't get that excited about it. The reason I was doing the polar plunge is because when I was living in the cabin, I didn't have any running water. So every day I'd go over to Little Creek, and I'd go in Little Creek and get in there and do that. And it started in the summer, and then I just kept going every single day. And then Nick used to say, but that's not really a shower. That's not really a bath. That's just sort of you laying in a dirty creek for like 3-4 minutes. That doesn't count. Does that count?
Mm-mm. No.
No. I mean, the water is dirty. And if you're dirty, all you're doing is adding more dirt.
But the water was moving at a pretty good clip. Thank you. But it was moving at a good clip, so a lot of the stuff that might be stuck on me would go away.
Well, there's all these other microscopic things you can't see. All kinds of bacteria.
Yeah, really?
Yeah. Did you bring a bar of soap with you?
No.
I tend to agree that does not count as bathing.
As a shower.
Right.
Got it. I almost don't want to do this story that Jack has or Joe has in there.
Which one?
Joe Mama.
I don't know. Open it and then Jack to name his son John Curley.
Mm-hmm. He's got a reason for that.
Yeah. Oof. Okay. You ready?
Are you ready?
43 seconds.
Are you ready?
I don't know. I don't. Jack. Jack is a weird. He's a strange duck.
The reason I'm going to name my first child after John Curley is just out of resentment for John. Does that make sense?
No.
Because John didn't name his child after himself.
Okay.
So I do it, right?
Okay.
And so then I name John my child after.
So you'll have John Curley the third and the fourth. You'll take over his lineage.
Well, it'll
screw
be.
Yourself.
Hi, John.
Screw yourself.
So my first child's name will be John Curley Stein.
Okay.
That'll be my first child. And then for his stage name, he'll shorten it just to John Curley. So there'll be a lot of clout.
Naturally.
See, and I'll do all this purely out of spite against John, who decided to name his child Rye for some reason. Yeah. What is the deal with this, John? You have a lineage of a name. I shall be stealing it from you. And that's the way that works.
My father was John M. Curley. I am John M. Curley Jr. And I just didn't like the name John. I thought Rye would be stuck with John. A friend, Dick Maller, who never had kids, I called him up one day and I said, could you do me a favor? If you had a kid, would you name your kid? He said Rye Cooter because he loved Rye Cooter, the musician. I thought Rye sounds like a good name. So he became Rye. And Dick Mallory was the only one that knew the sex of the baby. So we didn't look to see for Charlie. The first baby was Charlie. We said, boy or girl, it's going to be Charlie because we never met a Charlie we didn't like. And then people, oh, how about Charlie Manson? I was like, okay.
Well, they do have a point.
I know, but most Charlies are friendly, right?
Yeah.
Don't
well, Charlie Brown isn't very friendly. He's just sad.
Okay. Really? Is this what we're going to do?
Well, Charlie Chaplin, also kind of sad.
Oh, my God. Charlie Weaver, nice
Charlie
guy.
Charlie Weaver, very nice
okay.
guy.
Okay. There's a lot of nice Charlies. We thought Charlie's right. a friendly name, right? Like Edgar doesn't sound friendly. Charlie sounds friendly. So we named Charlie, boy or girl, and then we didn't know the sex of either one, and then the only person knew was Dick Mallory, the woman that was doing the sonogram on Lace. We handed her the phone. Dick was on the other end. He's in Washington, D.C., and she told him the sex, and then he knew whether we were going to have a boy or a girl, and he was the one that said, name your son Rye. So I did it as a gift to my friend Dick Mallory. That's where Rye came from. And now Rye is stuck with, oh, is that short for Ryan? Or he goes to Starbucks and it's like, Ryan. He's like, nope, just Rye. Just plain old Rye. R-Y. Just Rye Curley. So, you know, it's a little odd, a little different. But the fact that Jack is going to, here's the crazy thing about Jack. He's going to find somebody that's going to procreate with him. Yeah, that is less likely than him actually naming a baby after me.
Kids like to vape.
Well, maybe he has something that, you know, maybe there's somebody that he hasn't really talked about, or there's a plan in there that we're not privy to.
Hmm. Well, I came up with an idea, a bit for his show.
Oh, yeah? Yeah.
Yeah. I know they're going to do it, but I said, here's one for you. Since you're single and you're living in Seattle, the whole freeze thing and everything, get Laura to do a, like a, you know, a dating app thing. Put a picture of yourself up there. Take your baseball cap off. Do a picture of yourself. Get your app up there. And then you find somebody that wants to meet you. Then Laura votes, Spike votes, and you vote. If they vote for a woman, a different woman than you vote, you got to go on that date with that woman and come back and report on it, like on Monday.
Did he go
and
for it?
I thought he'd go, I'm not going to do that. But he's like, all right, that's a good idea. So,
because he wants his John Curley Jr. or John Curley Sr. or John, what is it now? Would it be John Curley the Third?
It would. Well, yeah, he could do that. He could take the third, yeah. So anyway, that is kooky. Oh, that is just weird.
Wacky stuff.
Well, he's wacky stuff. I think he's looking out for you. He doesn't want the John Curley name. Yeah, he doesn't want the John Curley name to like fade away somewhere. So he's saying, yeah, let's
everybody, let's... everyone. We are all but bubbles on the ocean, Sherry. As I fill in another black box of my death calendar.
Uh-huh.
Coming around. Yep. Stealing
the
mind.
Is that starting to get to you a little?
No. Okay. It's better than ever. Better than ever as I'm bringing it in.
So,
I lost a friend. I lost a neighbor the other day. Remember the woman that was killed instantly when the tree came down on her car? It was in Issaquah. It was on a Saturday 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
I knew her. She was my neighbor. And it was this thing like, oh, my God, you're about Lynn. But again, it just you. Every single one of these experiences should remind you the incredibly how fragile and how completely helpless we all are to whatever else is out there in the world that has a different plan than what we have.
Right.
So you have to enjoy every moment. Like every single time Nate gets on talking about traffic, people should be leaning in and listening, really
and
living
enjoying the
Nate.
Moment.
Yes,
every part of it.
Yeah, if he clears his throat,
wait till
he stutters.
It could be your last traffic report. You just don't know in the blink of an eye.
Oh,
something could happen.
Oh, my. You're really painting a nice picture.